possible solutions. Okay. So some of these slides may be just a little bit duplicate. I just want to show you again what the problem is. Here's what we're going to talk about on solutions. We are spending an enormous amount of time educating our farmers. We have 6,000 farmers that now are going through training, okay? They do it with our, we do pesticide applicator training. They get 3 hours. Now they are mandated to get 2 hours of nutrient management training every year. They're talking about upping that maybe in the future. If we become a distressed watershed, and we're about that close from doing that, we may have to have 8 hours of training, and it'll really put a cramp on how farmers are going to do it. So we're trying to avoid that at all costs. We're going to talk about this right rate, right source, place, and time. That's really where the emphasis has been in Ohio. We give a little bit of talk to the soil health. I'm a big soil health advocate. We'll talk about some of those towards the end and how they can help out. Other major factors are the soil organic matter, how we can improve the water infiltration, and how maybe we can change some of our farming practices. I've come up with this term. I call it ecological farming, combining the no-till with the cover crops. It takes a lot of management in order to do that, but if we do those things right, I think that's a real part of the solution. I'm not saying it's a total solution, but it's part of the solution. So here's the phosphorus forms and the availability to the algae. We have this. This is part of what we teach to our farmers. We've got this particulate phosphorus. It's about 30% bioavailable, so the algae grow a little bit slower. If we can reduce that amount of sediment going into the fields, that would be into our waterways, that would be great. But our biggest issue is now with this soluble. Even though our phosphorus levels have come down and our amount of fertilizers come down, the amount of dissolved reactive phosphorus has gone up. And again, I think it goes back to the way that we're farming and how we're doing this. So we're going to discuss that here in solutions. So here's what we talk about: a rate, avoid overloading the soils. Where the soil tests are above 40 parts per million Bray P1 or 58 parts per million Malic 3, do not apply any additional phosphorus in that corn-soybean rotation. Most of our guys are putting the phosphorus on when they do it once after a corn soybean rotation. They put on all their phosphorus and fertilizer needs. Generally, they've been broadcasting it because our farmers are getting bigger. But now we're trying to promote injecting. And again, I want to use that term injecting rather than incorporating. Unfortunately, we've done so well teaching them that we need to incorporate it that everybody got their plow out this fall. And we had a great fall, and I guess they like to do this recreational tillage. We're going to see, I think, a lot of sediment issues this next year if we get normal rainfall. Here's our fertilizer sources. We have seen some changes. We've taken out a lot of the elements and some of the impurities in our phosphorus, and you can see the water solubility. It's greater than 90% for triple superphosphate. It's 100% for these other ones. So as we've done that, that has changed. And that could be part of the issue with why we're seeing more soluble reactive phosphorus. Incorporating phosphorus reduces that risk of loss. I just took this. This is what we're using on our slides. Again, I'm trying to emphasize the word inject rather than incorporate, but this is what we're teaching. When phosphorus fertilizer comes in contact with soil, we want to get it quickly bound or fixed into that soil matrix. If the phosphorus does not come in contact, then it remains soluble, and it's at risk for being lost in those rainfall events. So we're really trying to inject it, and now we're working on new placement strategies and tools where we can, instead of broadcasting, we're going to inject it directly in. And we're also pushing banding our applications into the soil. So these are the concepts we teach to our farmers. Time, this is a huge thing. No winter application anymore, whether it be manure or whether it be fertilizer. If we've got snow covered or frozen, we have definitions for snow covered and frozen soil. It's basically frozen if you can't till it, and that's their definition. So if it's if you can get across the field and it's not and you can get it into the soil, then you're allowed to do it in the winter time. So we don't have any time frames on this. Let's look at the long-term no-till versus the rotational tillage. This is what we're seeing. We're seeing more and more of these rainfall events. This is only a 3/4-inch rain. And look at where we have the no-till soybeans and then strip-till corn. The water's able to infiltrate. Over here on the right, that is a rotational tilled field, so 1 year no-till, the next year we're seeing a lot of standing water, and that's what we're trying to avoid. So what's happening is we're disrupting those macropores. Macropores are like superhighways. They move the water in, and if with the roots, we can actually slow that water down. Those cover crops can absorb the nutrients, and as it slows it down, it goes from a macropore to a micropore to a biopore, and then we can actually give it time to come in contact with that soil mineralogy. And that's the advantage of the cover crops that we think. Again, if you have extremely high levels, it's going to be hard for that to be able to do that. It's a slow process. This is what we're seeing. We're seeing that bulk density that is occurring right there where that blue arrow is. We're trying to measure that. I have a research site now where we have 5 years of research, where we're trying to do long-term research. We have a corn, soybean, wheat rotation, and we have three different types of tillage that we're doing there. Conventional, where we're doing the vertical tillage, long-term no-till. Again, with long-term no-till, you got a lot of macropores. You don't have any roots in there. It may not be the total solution, but then we're looking at no-till with the cover, what I like to call ecological farming, and that's where we're really trying to make some difference. So here's what we're doing. We've got some research on this. The big thing we're finding is if we can tie that phosphorus up in an organic form, it's more stable in the soil, has a carbon chain attached to it. So this exchangeable phosphorus, we've been taking some. That's your active phosphorus, active organic matter that's tying up that phosphorus. That is much better than your soluble reactive. We've got some data that shows how much more we can do with cover crops. Slowly or not available to the plant, we've got it tied up in calcium. We've got it in this iron, aluminum, and then the residual is kind of with your humus. And there's a hierarchy here. The humus is by far the best. And then the iron and the aluminum, if there isn't enough humus, we've lost 50% of our organic matter from our soils, then the iron and the aluminum take over. The problem is that iron is not very stable. And so what we want to try to do is get more humus, get more exchangeable phosphorus in that organic form or that humus into that soil to tie up that phosphorus. And so this is what you've already seen this. I'm just telling you that's what's going on. So here's our research. We did this. We took 50 soil samples about 2 years ago. We've been working on this. We're just getting ready to get this published here pretty soon. But with the cover crops, we're seeing that it has 8.8 times more exchangeable phosphorus than what the control did. The control was conventional tillage, and you can see there it had 4.2 times more soluble reactive phosphorus in it. Again, if we can move towards getting that into an organic form, that's what we're trying to do. So that is the big thing that we're working on. Cover crops versus control on stratification. Again, the cover crops had in the exchangeable form had considerably more, 9 times more tied up that way than what the control did. Our control here was red clover. It had significantly lower stratification of P in that SRP, the soluble reactive form, and that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to keep that phosphorus tied up as much as possible. A big thing, I think, the reason I put this slide on there is just infiltration. You can plow it, and actually no-till is actually worse if you have a bare surface, but once you get that residue on the soil surface, that really helps at 40%. You know, we double and triple the amount where we have a bare surface, and the no-till there at 80% cover, we're at 1.04 inches per hour of infiltration rate. So we really think this goes back to our infiltration and what's going on. I like to put this one up just because I think a lot of our things are ecological. I like to use this when I talk to EPA. I say to them, you know, we had 60 million buffalo in this country in the early 1800s. Did they stop eating or pooping in the wintertime? Okay, the answer is no. Did we have a water quality problem? As far as we know, it was pristine, so let's learn a lesson from the buffalo. First of all, spread your manure thin. Second of all, apply it to a live crop. I think that's one of the things that we can learn from the buffalo. So that's kind of what we're doing with this ecological farming. A couple more slides real quickly. When we do that conventional tillage, we lose a lot of carbon. A lot of those nutrients are freely floating out there. And especially if we're putting on this fertilizer in the fall, that's what our research is showing. A lot of it is done with this ecological farming. We're tying up those nutrients. What happens at the end of the winter and spring? We get the heavy rains, the snow melt. A lot of those nutrients are lost through these tile lines or through preferential flow or even volatilization. Can go right up, but with denitrification, we can lose some of that nitrogen. Where we're doing the ecological farming, we're trying to tie those up. Now, are all cover crops alike? And the answer is no. Probably the radish are one of the worst ones that we have because they get so big. They really tie up the nutrients. I think I have a slide or two on that. But the problem is they die off, so we got to really watch which ones we're putting. Here's the problem with the no-till. We can create those macropores, but if we don't put a plug in there, what I call a root, that root is going to absorb soluble nitrogen, soluble phosphorus, and it's going to slow that water down, allow it to move out through that soil profile, and that's the concept that we're trying to promote. Here's those daikon radish. They're the most popular. They have caused a problem. They die off. They leave a big hole. However, they're not all the same. Here's just a little bit of information on the content. 650 pounds of nitrogen. It's just amazing how much they can bring on an acre. This was done on Dave Brandt's farm, some of the work that Rafik did here. So phosphorus is about 23 pounds, a lot of potassium. So what we're looking at is trying to find something that has a little bit more fibrous root system. So we're looking at the grasses. Good cover crops were absorbing soluble reactive phosphorus. Everything on the left. Cereal rye, annual rye grass can be a little hard to manage. You got to be a top-notch management to do that. But triticale, barley, and even wheat. Wheat's probably down below. If you want to put radish in there, I don't have a problem. But when you put them on at 8 to 10 pounds, and that's the only cover crop you have out there, you're asking for problems. So minimize it. I don't want to see more than a pound is what I'm recommending. And I really want a lot of these grasses on the left-hand side. We can use oats, but what's the problem with oats? Oats dies off in the wintertime, so those aren't good. What about legumes? Well, legumes can be part of the mixture, especially crimson clover and other things, but they're not quite as good at tying up nitrogen and the phosphorus. Again, it's the amount of biomass that we can get per acre. So I think these grasses do a much better job. We have issues with short pasture and alfalfa fields. Why is that? Well, you get above ground what you get below ground. So if you really overgraze a field, you're going to have grass that's about that tall, even our lawns, and you're not going to have very many roots. So it's all about roots and adding organic matter. What about alfalfa fields? Alfalfa is a great crop, but it's got a tap root. And those tap roots, we have seen alfalfa die out, and when it dies out, we've got a direct conduit down to our tile. So I'm not saying you can't put that on, use an alfalfa field, but it's much better if it's mixed and has some grasses in it. Grasses, I think, are our best issue. So I think with that, these are our summary solutions. Maintain the four R's. We want to keep talking about rate, source, place, and time, but I really think we also got to add some of the cover crops and the no-till into that. Inject it. We're not going to incorporate our manure and our fertilizer. Reduce our surface compaction. Improve our soil structure. That's really what it amounts to. And increasing our water infiltration. I think we can do that with increasing our eco-farming system, using the cover crops and the no-till. I will agree with her on some of the things she said on these very, very high fields. Those are going to be a real problem. But if a majority of our farms, hopefully we can, these practices are really going to help. Increase that organic matter because there is a hierarchy. The more we can tie it up by carbon, the better this soluble reactive phosphorus will be. The nice thing about this carbon is soil organic matter is a buffer. It's a buffer for so many things in the soil. If that plant really needs it, the soil organic matter has a much higher propensity to maybe release that to that plant than what it does with iron. Iron is going to keep it tied up until it gets saturated. So that's one of the things. So, and then the last thing, some things that we're doing, I didn't put this in because I didn't think I had time. We are fixing our blind inlets. This is an engineering thing. We have a lot of inlets now. Guys are trying to get that water, surface water off, and now we're starting to fix that. We've got a whole new system that they're putting in to fix some of those blind inlets. So we don't have that transport factor directly right to our tile line. So that is an issue that we're working on. That is one of the engineering things that I am promoting there also. Thank you.
Let's thank our speaker.